Dr. Ronnie Samuel is a clinical psychologist with extensive experience in the area of emotional healing and wholeness. She works in private practice as a psychotherapist, seeing both hospital inpatients and outpatients. Her work is centered on guiding individuals through their healing journey from a place of crisis to one of greater resilience and contentment. Dr. Samuel embraces both the psychological and spiritual aspects of healing. She is one of the few psychotherapists in the country who has been researching and sharing about the topic of trauma in the womb, and we are so glad to be able to glean from her knowledge and grace.
When I was preparing for today, I didn't really know who was attending, so I thought about all of you, and each one of us is in a different phase of our healing. We are at different points in our spiritual journeys. We ask ourselves different questions. And this past week, you know, I had one of my patients, let's call him David, because he actually looks like the sculpture of David. And he knows this since birth when he walks through my waiting room. Can you imagine? All the ladies are well entertained. So I know him for quite a while, and you know, he struggled with many things. He started a new business when he started to see me. He's doing extremely well. His products have gone global. But he struggles with anxiety. But when he came to see me this time, I was quite surprised because he's doing quite well. So I said to him, you know, David, I'm quite surprised when I saw you in my diary. And he sat down, he says, you know, I've been struggling with a question. Because David's, he's not sure what he believes. He's not sure where he is on his journey. And he says, you know, this whole life and death thing, I want to understand it. I want to unpack my beliefs. I'm not sure if there must be a creator, because his work is very creative. So he says there must be a creator. So I said, okay, we'll spend the session. And we went through big life questions like, why was the world made? What is this? Why earth? Why humans? Who is God? He wanted to look at questions like that. And I think we all do. We all figuring things out. And in the end of the session, he, you know, we had a deep talk. And he said, you know, I'm still so confused. Why don't you tell me what you believe? And I said, well, that's not really appropriate for psychotherapy. You know, I'm your psychologist. He says, well, you know me for 4 years and I insist. So I said, okay, you ask the questions, I'll answer. So he did, and I proceeded to tell him what my beliefs were as he asked. And then at the end he says, well, I like some of the things you say, so can I pick and choose what I want? And I'll add my other bits. And I said, no, it doesn't really work like that, you know. So I will continue to see him. But what I want to say is, you know, this is Jabok. It's a pause in your journey. See this as an invitation to come, to sit, to consider, to contemplate where you are, what are your questions. And perhaps today, you know, we're starting at the beginning of a journey. When you were a child, and I hope someone read you childhood stories or you read your own, and everything starts with once upon a time, long, long ago. But it also, in the great book, it starts with, you know, in the beginning. So we all have beginnings, and where is that beginning? And that's part of what I want to unpack today. So a little bit about myself. As mentioned, I'm a clinical psychologist. I work as a psychotherapist. So that means I don't do assessments. If you come to me, you're not going to get many tests, but I will give you a journey. And it's a journey of building a healthy therapeutic relationship and exploring your life and containing it and moving you towards purpose. Now, this particular area of trauma, and speaking about it from both a psychological and a spiritual point of view, you know, I was thinking 20 years ago, I would probably suffer professional isolation for bringing a topic like this to the fore, to say there's a spiritual link with this, but I think this is the right time. So when did I first become aware of this topic? And it's interesting, I became aware when I was in training as a clinical psychologist. So, you know, I do your master's, and part of that is, you know, to attend a hypnosis training. Now, I was very skeptical about hypnosis, and I think I was also afraid. But anyway, it was part of my requirements, so I went for the training. So it was only qualified psychologists that attended, and we had two experienced hypnotherapists taking us through the various processes. For me personally, you know, I was going to attend as an observer. I didn't want anyone dabbling into the inner doorways of my psyche. And for me, I said, okay, let me go with an open mind. And I experienced the many faces of hypnosis during that time. But the session that intrigued me the most is what we call hypnotic regression. So regression is a technique similar to time travel. So we can go backwards. So I think I just thought, okay, let me observe this. So of course I was not going to volunteer to be the subject. But let's call her Sarah. She was a very esteemed psychologist in our community. And she volunteered to actually undergo the hypnotic regression technique. Now, in psychology, in medicine in general, you know, we have a lot of respect for our colleagues, for our seniors, people that are accomplished in the field. And Sarah was one of those people to us. And when they asked her, why do you want to undergo this technique? And she said, my whole life I've never felt good enough. I suffer with high anxiety. Most of the time I lack confidence. Now, that was very interesting for someone we saw as well put together and polished as a person. And she thought she could find some clues with going backwards. So during the hypnosis session, you know, you're placed in a deep, relaxed state and you start traveling backwards. And for her, she went and activated childhood memories and preschool memories. And then at one point, she stopped talking. And she placed herself, you know, like swimming. You were buoyant. You were in a suspended position. And she started to talk like a child. And she started crying and saying, I'm scared. I'm afraid. Nobody wants me. And this continued, and she was visibly distressed in the session. So, you know, we closed the session, we brought her out, well, the head of the training did, and then asked her a couple of questions, because clearly we felt we had experienced a womb experience, because it was childlike, it was talking in childlike soft tones. And what we learned was that Sarah knew nothing of her mother's pregnancy. It was never, ever spoken about. And the task for her that evening was to go and find out. Now, for me as a very young psychologist, this totally intrigued me. And I have always had my concerns, which were seen in the workshop again, because, you know, hypnosis, I've seen people become completely undone in hypnosis. So it's not something I don't practice hypnosis. It's not something I personally would recommend unless it is done by somebody who watches over your soul, and there aren't many people like that. So be careful. I'm not suggesting it here. You know, to open yourself up to it. But this was part of my training, and it is what I saw. While this must be, you know, some very well-trained hypnotherapists, I would say this is a soul issue, And if you trust that person with your soul, yes, then you can proceed. And personally, I won't do it myself. But that's me. So it's interesting. We all went home that day waiting for Sarah's revelations in the morning. And she came back and she said that for the first time, she had a heart-to-heart conversation with her mother. And what her mother revealed was that when she was conceived, the father did not want this child, did not want Sarah. So it was a terrifying time. The mother was alone, and they were recently married, but they did not, the father didn't want a child. They had actually discussed not having children immediately, and the father left. So left the mother. So the mother was alone for the entire 9 months of the pregnancy, and she was depressed and terrified, and she actually admitted to trying to abort Sarah several times. So all of this had actually happened. But interestingly, on the day of Sarah's birth, the father returned. He came to hospital to see her, to see the baby. And from the moment, the mother and the father just continued never to speak about this. And Sarah had no idea that this was her early story. But clearly, no matter how accomplished she became, this was coded into her being. Feeling unloved, feeling unwanted, highly anxious. So everything in her senses. And she lived this out. So, you know, I think it's so important to reflect on our early stories because we never really think about it, do we? You know, preparing for this workshop, I was forced to think about my own journey. Like, where did my story start? But think of yourself. I mean, imagine, none of us think about the moment of our conception. We don't know much about it. Or just being two cells. Multiplying, becoming four, becoming eight in your mother's womb, becoming millions, developing your face, developing your hands, your legs, your limbs, hearing your mother's heartbeat, growing, you know, right until your time of birth. I mean, on the day you were born, what was it? Was it a day like this? Was it, you know, what did your mother do that morning? Where was your father? So, you know, a whole lot of things. And I think we need to pause and consider that today. What was our story? Where's our in the beginning? So I hope you would do that. But I wanted, you know, so this happened like more than 20 years ago, and I did not know what to do with that information. Because I think for me, the world was not ready for all of it, and neither was the church. The church was not ready to hear things like this, that there's things happening, invisible interactions going on. Because there's a genuine spiritual dimension to this, as you've heard this morning, and I'm going to go deeper into that. But a few years ago, probably about 2 years ago, I just want to tell you about this case that brought this back to the forefront of the class for me. I'm just going to call him Jason. He was 25 years old. And he struggled with cannabis addiction, depression, debilitating anxiety. I mean, he could barely speak. He stuttered. He stammered. And he's an artist. He's a graphic artist. And a very good one. So he can communicate creatively, but one-to-one was really tough. And he was admitted several times for the addiction, for the anxiety, and that's when I started to see him. But the current admission, say probably 2 years ago, he had a breakup with his girlfriend, and he felt completely suicidal. So he was admitted just to contain him. And, you know, this breakup was like devastating. It was gutting. And as a psychologist, you will know when the response is of such high intensity to what is actually happening, you know that something deeper is going on. You know, over the years, you figure that out. I know when something far more intense and something early is going on. But this was a painful separation. So in hospital, I said to him, Jason, why don't you just draw me? You know, he's a graffiti artist. So I said, draw me what's actually going on inside. You know, draw me a picture of your insides. And what he drew me was a very sad face and prison bars and the number 25, which is his age written. And he said, I am imprisoned. And 25, I have a life sentence to my anxiety and to my depression. And it's never going to get better. And that's how stuck this young man was. So at that point in time, his parents were undergoing a divorce. And the mother was asking to see me, which is part of what we do. We see family. But she said to me, she's got some important information to tell me about Jason. And what she shared with me was that they came from a small, conservative, rural community. Perhaps many of us came from places like that. And the mother had had an affair, and Jason was conceived. And there was all the scandal and talk in the town. So her husband said, we will keep this a secret, and you have to keep it a secret for all your days. On that condition, I will adopt this child, and he will be like mine. So he had a very different paternity. And when she told me this, now remember, this was a divorcing couple, so they couldn't communicate with each other. And it was my task to actually share this information with him. And you know, we were sitting together, I could still imagine it, in the small consulting room in the hospital. And I said to him, I have something so important to tell you about your story, and it's going to change everything. And you know, I said to him, I really didn't know how to open with this, and I needed a lot of wisdom. And I said to him, your father is actually your adoptive father. And there's a cry that comes from like an ancestral cave when things like this are cracked open. And you know, we call it a primal cry. It's a cry of longing and loss and depth and recognition. And that's the cry that he just emanated. It was like, you know, an animal in a cave. And he wept from that place, just him and I sitting. And I just went, I sat next to him, I put my hand on his shoulder, and we just stayed like that. And then began the healing process, you know, the grieving. There's a lot of grief work, the forgiveness. All of that came, and there was deep emotional restoration. And, you know, now this guy is healed completely. And I can't figure everything out, you know. Sometimes psychotherapy can take years. This was in a short period of time. And I don't see him anymore. He's well. He's fine. The stuttering is gone. He doesn't feel alienated in the world. He knows he belongs here. He's purposeful. He's succeeding in his career. And this, for me, just once again brought it right to the fore. For 25 years, he knew that he was an unwanted child, that something was wrong. He couldn't put his finger on it. So here's another case. And, you know, I can give you case after case. But I hope this will get you thinking. So let's talk about you, okay? Let's do some introspection on your conception. Think of your mom, okay? I hope you know her. But I wonder what the first response to the news of pregnancy about you was. Was it positive? Was it negative? Were they ambivalent about the news that mom was pregnant with you? I'm wondering if your mother was well supported, whether people were excited around her, or did she feel isolated? Was she afraid? Was she anxious? What was her level of stress? Was she cushioned and loved, or was she just terrified? Was it a time of celebration, or was it a time of trepidation? Was this a planned pregnancy? Were you a planned pregnancy, or were you a surprise? Were you a teen pregnancy? Was there sexual abuse in your conception? So if you could gather the emotional state of your mother at that time, what about your father? What was his response? Was he afraid? Was he a teen? Was he celebrating? Was he terrified to tell his parents what was going to happen? Was he the perpetrator of abuse against your mom? What about the family? How did the family receive you? Were they rejecting of your mother, of this news? Were they supportive or were they dismissive? Did they like pretend it was not happening? What about finance? You know, so often I hear parents tell me, it was just one more mouth to feed and we didn't know how to do that. Do you know the impact of those words? You will spend the rest of your life proving that you deserve to be here. Validating yourself if you were just one more mouth to feed. The other question I hear often in my office is people would tell me things while in private. You know, the mother will confess, they would talk about the child as it. What shall we do with it? Imagine if you named as it in the beginning. You will have doubt for the rest of your life about your worth and about your wholeness. And definitely if there was talk of abortion, or if an abortion was attempted, that brings a whole different dimension. And, you know, as I continue with my talk, the fetus feels and gathers thing from the abortion, carries the emotion. And I think very importantly, what was the spiritual environment at the time of your birth? Were teenagers who didn't figure out what they believed in? Was there conflict? Was it two diverse belief systems and they were planning a wedding? You know, as they say, a shotgun wedding. I've never been exposed to guns. I don't know much about that term. But these are your questions. And today, you get to consider it. I mean, where did trauma start? Or where did your blessing start? You know, it can be positive or negative, what happens in the womb. Okay, I see I've got you thinking. I can see it all around the room, so I'm glad. So let me just talk about the two concepts. I mean, this word trauma. What is this word trauma? It comes from a Greek word which means a wound. So they could be wounds, trauma. Could be physical or it could be emotional. And what I'm talking about today is the emotional wounds. And what is it caused by? It's caused by violence. Violence doesn't have to be just physical. Calling someone it is violence to the soul. And I want to tell you, part of working as a psychologist, you know, we work with trauma every single day in all its forms. And the first thing that a person wants to do when they are traumatized is they want to eradicate it. They want to banish it from consciousness. They would like to bury it somewhere. And it gets buried for long. It gets buried for decades until something happens now that will activate this whole cycle. But you know, trauma is such that it cannot be buried and it won't be denied. It will surface. You know, we use the word unspeakable. When people come and sit across me in my office, the things that they start sharing was once unspeakable. And that's what trauma does. We silence it within us. But to heal, we have to speak it. And this probably you can relate to. I mean, we live in South Africa. We're traumatized in so many ways daily. I mean, you open the news, you open the app, and it's there, every headline. And do you know how trauma comes in? It first comes in through our senses. We hear, we taste, we feel, we touch, we smell. I mean, if there's been a shooting, we remember the sound. We remembered how we feel. That's what the fetus goes through as well. It goes through its senses. And spiritually, you will see that is a point of entry, is our senses. Now, we spoke briefly about the word uterus, right? The womb, uterus in medical terms, a hollow-shaped organ. But it's interesting in Hebrew, the original concept is the word rachahim, which means a place of compassion and mercy, protection from all harm. It's the safest place for a baby to grow. So imagine violence in a place of compassion. That's what trauma in the womb is about. It's like destruction of your purpose even before you arrive. How strategic is that to destroy your destiny before you make an appearance on the earth? I think that's incredibly intentional from a broad spiritual landscape. Okay, is it digesting? Is it going in? Soaking. Okay. Now, many scriptures have, you know, been shared already, but I want to just share two. And I think this one is especially relevant for this teaching. It's relevant for our country. It's relevant globally. And I think it's relevant for you. So it's Ezekiel 16, 4 to 6. Okay? So let me read it out. You can just listen. It says, on the day you were born, your cord was not cut, nor were you washed with water to make you clean, nor were you rubbed with salt or wrapped in cloths. No one looked on you with pity or had compassion enough to do these things for you. Rather, you were thrown out into the open field. For on the day you were born, you were despised. Then I passed by and I saw you kicking about in your blood. And as you lay there in your blood, I said to you, live. Live. What a powerful. If you go to your Bibles, you will see the word live is in bold and it has an exclamation mark. And if I could sum up this entire teaching, it's about to live again, to connect with your purpose. This word must be pulled down into your life. Because this must be life-giving. Okay, and the one you know so well, but it's really one of my favorites, is Jeremiah 1:5. Before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations. I mean, you were. I mean, I ask all my patients this. I said, you know, when they want to talk about these things, of course I serve a cross section of beliefs. I have from the atheist to, you can go on the spectrum. But they want to talk about this, you know, and especially when a patient is highly suicidal. And suicide is the escape. It's like, it's better than being here, I'm going. And my question always is, where are you going to? Where is this point of escape? It may feel like it's better than here, but where exactly is that? And then this whole discussion about beginnings and endings comes about. But I want you to know, if you're known before, you are known in the mind of God before your conception. So it's before the foundations of earth, you were formulated and conceptualized. Your spirit being was. The womb is an incubator for your destiny. I mean, therefore, you know, this whole abortion thrust, you know, for me, you know, I deal a lot with post-abortion trauma, and it's some of the worst kind of pain that lasts decades, but there's healing for that too, I want you to know. And I love this. We were all appointed and consecrated. Consecrated means that you are holy and you are sacred, that you are ordained for purpose. You are set apart. You are dedicated. That's who you were before. So when you come into the womb, you are earmarked for destiny. And what happens in the womb? We go from consecrated to desecrated. All these traumas, all this, these things that happen sometimes because of the immaturity of our own parents. Believe me, it's not always intentional. There's a lot of immaturity that leaves a fetus unguarded. So today, we're going back to clean up those desecrated places. That is what I wish to do. You know, when I usually prepare presentations for my medical presentations, I have this neat little PowerPoint presentation. But believe me, when you do a presentation like this, you have like 10 pieces of paper, and every day you've got something new to add. So last week I went old school and I bought a book and I started writing in it to put all my thoughts in one place. So what I want you to understand now is this may be a refresher for some of you, but how do we conceptualize ourselves as human beings? And I want you to understand that the fetus has the same, and I've called it the architecture of being human. And what I'm talking about there is spirit, soul, and body. You know, so many of us just see the fetus as a body. And that's what we call it, a body, a fetus. You know, it's so distant from it. And therefore, we can make so many arguments to dispose of it. Because it's just a body. You know, and women would say, it's my body. I can do as I please with it. No, it's not your body. It's a separate body within you who has its own spirit, soul, and body. So it's a very elegant balance is what I'm saying. It's spirit over soul over body. So think of yourself firstly. You know, what is spirit? What is soul? What is body? I mean, do we ever like seriously consider it? So I'm going to throw some thoughts out to you. For me, the spirit, and you can find enough biblical reference for it, your spirit is a deposit of God's divinity in you. Okay? That's what spirit is. It's an empowerment. You know, you can call it God's divine nature deposited into you. It's a spark. It's ageless. It's indestructible. You know, I have to often counsel people who have suffered great loss. You know, they've lost a child sometimes, they've lost a spouse. And this is what they want to talk about. It's like, where is my loved one? You know, the spirit of a person never dies. It crosses over, you know, into another, to back to God. You know, it's like, you know, the river always entering the ocean, but your spirit is ageless. I want you to know. Our bodies can die, but your spirit will never die. And as I said, if God is the ocean, your spirit is taking almost a bucket of that ocean and pouring it into you. So you get that. That's what your spirit being is. Your spirit has a mind, it has a will, and it has a heart. And I'm going to go into that a bit later. But the heart of the spirit is love. It only knows how to love. Perfect love casts out all fear, and that's the love in your spirit being. So what about your soul? What is the soul? Your soul is like a bridge. It translates from the spirit to the body. So it's that transitional bridge. Your soul is perfectly constructed to dwell in your body. It includes your thoughts, it has a will, it has a heart. And in your soul is where emotions lie. You won't find scripture referring to emotions, but the heart of your soul is the emotional center. You know, we've often heard the soul is the seat of our emotions. And there's, for me, my metron of grace is to work with emotions. That's where I've been graced, I've been trained, I've been put to my own tests. But the heart of your soul, if not under the rule of your spirit, will be full of fear. And that's where the enemy will go for, your emotions. And we are so unguarded and untrained in our emotions, in our souls. So your body, you know, is physical. And you know what is really interesting? When your body suffers, you must check your emotions. The enemy can't come to your body. It comes through your emotions that will manifest in your body. Anyone who first comes to see me with an illness, they come with bodily complaints. I've got a headache. I've got a backache. I'm not sleeping. Full of anxiety. My heart is racing. But if you backtrack and go to the emotions, that's where you will find some root. Okay? So I want you to just register that. So as I said, the order is spirit, soul, and body. So your soul is supposed to come under the rule of your spirit, and your body should be under your soul. So that is the elegant balance of it all. So who is this enemy of our souls? How well do you know the enemy of your souls? Because the enemy can't come for your spirit. The spirit is the domain of God. So your greatest point of vulnerability as a human being is your soul. It's where your emotional life resides, in the heart of your soul. Now you must remember, the enemy of your soul is a servant. What do I mean? You need to understand the nature of angels and their relationship to your soul. Who's an angel? Biblically, an angel is a ministering servant. And it's a servant of your soul and not your spirit. The spirit is the domain of God. Angels have no jurisdiction on your spirit. So as I said to you, your soul has a heart. And if angels were given dominion over your souls and to minister to it, they can not only minister to it, but they can also exploit it. They can abuse your soul in the area of your emotions. And I want you to know, your enemy knows your human soul better than you know it. And I will go to that just now. You know, most of us think the enemy of our souls is unsophisticated. You know, we walk into a church or you go to meetings and people think they can deal with this in a very casual manner. I want you to understand the enemy of your soul is sophisticated, strategic, intentional, precise, very calculated. As I said, if we can get you in the womb, destroy you and destroy your destiny. For me, that is a well thought out, intentional plan. You know, we heard the term a surgical strike is a war term, where you come in and there's a surgical strike and you move. And for me, womb trauma is like a surgical strike. I come in, I destroy something, I call you unwanted, I install it in your system, and you will suffer the consequences for the rest of your days. Now, let me tell you why the enemy should not be taken lightly. Number one, your enemy is invisible. Your enemy is invisible. You know, humans, we are limited by time and space. How do we fight an invisible enemy? You know, that's like nerve gas coming through this room. You can't see it. Now, that's the enemy that traumatizes our soul. Highly invisible, stalking you, waiting. You must remember, the enemy has had a longer lifespan than you. Satan was in the garden. So it's mapped and tracked you and your generations, people that you do not know, for centuries. It's mapped and tracked you generationally. So how much more of an advantage has somebody who's lived far longer than you? So if you work in a company and just say you've worked there 25 years, you have what is called intellectual property, don't you? So you're a long-serving employee. You understand things. So imagine an enemy that knows you from the garden. It knows all your patterns, all your predecessors. It has mapped and tracked your ancestry from generation to generation. So do not treat your enemy casually. And what does it do? It forms a dossier. It forms a file of information about each one of us. All our consistencies and our inconsistencies. And then strikes. So the plan against your soul is intentional. And very often, it will start in the womb. Because you are the largest threat. Because you've come to effect God's plan on earth. So you are the biggest threat of all. So what I want you to understand this morning is that the enemy, you've heard it before, operates in schemes. And there's schemes of the enemy against the unborn child. And what is a scheme? A scheme is a strategy. It's intentional and it's executed. You know, I have a patient who's a doctor and she's a specialist. And she was telling me about the intricacies of conducting a biopsy. You know, and she was doing breast biopsies. And think of that needle going in and getting a sample. How strategic, how penetrative. And I want you to see that as what happens to an unborn child. It's like something penetrating, depositing something, or extracting something. And it's done. So as I said, the goal is to create turmoil in your emotions. And how does it come as an adult? As an adult, it could be the end of a relationship. It could be death. It could be divorce. It could be a car accident. It could be a robbery. It could be a retrenchment, an invasion. It could be violence. It could be rape. And what happens is when something happens as an adult and you go through these senses and you feel it in your five senses, it immediately activates what happened in the womb. So suddenly, your emotions are so out of control. It's because the current will activate what happened in the past. So yes, you were robbed and it is traumatic, but it activates something else that will take you out completely. And then what happens? You are so overwhelmed that you start thinking, should I even be here? Because suicide, you know, a lot of people say to me, I'm ashamed to admit that I've had suicidal thoughts. I have thought about this. I may not act on it. I want you to know today that those are not your thoughts. Suicidal thoughts are not your thoughts. They are the thoughts of the enemy because the goal ultimately is to assassinate you and end your purpose. So do not ever think suicide is your thoughts. You know, and suicide is a spirit because you will find, if you map and track suicide, I once worked in an area where 15 teenagers died over a six-month period. So it was a spirit hovering in that area. They were all killed in that area. And they were all between the ages of like 14 to 18. There's a lot of things we don't understand. So I want to tell you about the three main wounds that will come to you in the womb. Okay? The three wounds in the soul of an unborn child. There's rejection, there's abandonment, and there's fear. Those are the three big ones, and I will elaborate. You know, when I was writing these terms down, it felt like emotional terrorism to me to live with rejection, abandonment, and fear. And I think at the heart of so many of our lives, we feel we don't belong. We feel there's a part of us without value. We'll achieve great things and question whether we deserve them. And that's where it started. I call it the triad of terror because it's emotional terror against you. And you know, it can be embedded in the womb and activated decades later. So what is this word rejection? You know, rejection comes from a Latin root word, which means throwback. Let's throw this back. It's unwanted. It's a castaway. It's shunned. It's dismissed. Let's refuse this child. You know, and there's a great element of shame in rejection. And how many of us have experienced rejection over time? You know, as humans, we have a great need to belong, to be part of a family, and to belong to each other and to belong to God. We have a great need. And if the enemy can install rejection against you, you know, you need to understand the things I'm talking about is almost curses against the unborn child. These are curses, you know, that are installed. And you live out this curse. I mean, you know, the rejected person always wants validation, wants approval, wants to feel valued and important. They have no worth. They have no trust. I mean, what do you think social media is about? It's saying, look at me. You know, that's what it's about. What are all those filters about? Nobody looks real anymore. But it's saying, look at me, accept me. This is who I am. But the, you know, this body obsession. But inside this chronic emptiness, this chronic aloneness. And when there's rejection, you know, it's, I want you to understand, rejection is a spirit. And what do we have? It's like you carry the spirit of this unwanted child. I mean, that case I gave you, that was the spirit of an unwanted child. You know, the other spirit is a spirit of abandonment and a spirit of fear. And as you reflect on your own life, I'm wondering what you are carrying. Are you carrying rejection? Did it start so early? You know, are you carrying the spirit of an unwanted child? I mean, in our country, we've got thousands of children. Our prisons are full. Our level of trauma. I mean, these are children that feel they are so unwanted. And it started so early. Let me tell you a little bit about how abandonment is different from rejection. You know, abandonment is a complete desertion emotionally by parents and the adults in the world. There's a forsaking. You know, we have a syndrome called the abandoned child syndrome. It's where you have the death or the loss of one or more parents. It was where there's a total lack of supervision. There's no provision for this child. These children are sleeping on the streets, so they're abandoned. You know, there's no provision, no support. There's often sexual abuse by one parent towards the child. You know, I saw this recently so clearly. I was treating a man of about 30 years old, and he was a child of a prostitute. And he told me, you know, she was an addict, she was a prostitute, And he lived in this environment where he would sit on the side of the road. I mean, she was gone off with some guy. And he would sit there waiting for every car to come by, hoping that would be his mother. Okay, let me say that again. He was a child of a prostitute. And he would sit on the side of the road waiting for his mother to return after she had seen one of these guys. And he didn't, I mean, little boy, probably 6 years old, 5 years old, sitting in a dark, cornered street in, you know, in the darkest part of the city, alone, waiting. That's abandonment. You know, and he had siblings. His mother had other children. And what had happened eventually was that one of his stepsisters ended up killing the mother. Because there was so much of trauma. And here he came and he was struggling. He was struggling to be somebody. He didn't know who he was. And he came into hospital and he's, you know, he doesn't know who his father is. You know, his mother had abandoned him. And now, you know, he was much late. He was 30 years old when he was dealing with all this. He grew up in an orphanage. And so can you imagine what that must feel like to be abandoned? And I have no doubt some of you sitting in this room have similar stories to tell. And the third one is a spirit of fear in a child. And this can live forever in you. And as I said, new trauma taps into this old trauma. I mean, it's only bringing this, dealing with your emotions in your soul and bringing it under the control of your spirit that releases you from rejection, fear, and abandonment. And I'm going to share how. This workshop is also about the how. It's not just talking to you about this concept. You know, as I was preparing this information, the picture that was given to me was of building a house. So just say you own, I see lots of lovely properties in Johannesburg. So, you know, you're living in this house. And imagine when your house was being built, an alien took occupation in the foundation of your house. And you didn't know this alien was there. It took occupation, made himself comfortable, and all of it. And you built this house, and it's a beautiful house. And one day, there's a storm, and the roof flies out, and at the same time, there's a fire in the basement. That's how trauma is. You can live with this your whole life and not know what's rooted in the basement.